today we are going to speak with Pato Banton. Pato has sort of earned a kind of maybe he probably doesn't like this word, but a kind of celebrity status in the Arantxa movement. He is a reggae artist, musician, singer, songwriter, creator, whatever you want to call it. He's all those things. And Pato is with us today to spend a couple of hours with us and just talk to us about his career and his calling as a musician and just all kinds of subjects. Again, Pato, welcome to the Cosmic Citizen.
Hi. Thank you, Andre. It's very, very nice to be here talking to you and Paula.
Great.
Hi, Pato.
Hi, beautiful. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good to hear your voice.
Nice one.
Pato, let me ask you, just for starters, you were at a couple of Arantxa conferences this summer, both the ICO8 conference in L.A. and also the Arantxa Association International conference in Kansas City. And when you were there, you made a very interesting distinction. You began your performance by saying that you are no longer in the music industry. You are in the music ministry. In fact, you turned down a concert appearance with Beyonce. And that's what you told your agent, I guess, that you are no longer in the music industry. You are now in the music ministry.
Mm-hmm.
What does that distinction mean for you?
Basically, the distinction for me is all about priorities, you know. I guess in the music industry, there's different aims and goals and ambitions and struggles and pressures. And I've spent maybe 20 years involved in the music industry, going through all of those various levels of success and pressure. But for me, the closer I guess I get to my spiritual nature, and the more I grow, and the more my desire to serve surfaces in my soul, is the less desire I have to be involved in the rat race of the music industry.
Mm.
And the more I really want to be about Michael's will, my father's will, and just, using my talent in ways of service rather than self-aggrandizement of the music industry. And early this year, I was contemplating becoming a minister, even though I've been ministering for years, but to become officially ordained. And maybe 2 days after I was contemplating it, a young couple who had come to one of my concerts in Colorado and joined a prayer circle after the show asked me if I would join them in holy matrimony. And so I decided that I would, go and get officially ordained. And I performed the marriage for them on the beach of San Diego.
Hey, Pato and Andre, some people on the board are saying that you're not audible or barely audible. Is there
okay,
any way to tune up the volume a bit?
I guess I can just talk a bit louder.
Yeah, that's all right. That's, there you go. That's much
okay.
Better. That's much better. Okay. By the way, speaking of the board, callers, if anybody wants to call in, please, if you want to talk to Pato, this is your chance, 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158. 8158. Pato, I think what you're saying about ministry versus industry, to me that's a model for all believers, I believe, whatever their career is. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, having a career and making a living. We all have to do that. But I, for example, talk radio is sort of what I believe God has called me to do. And but what does that mean? That means it's not just a career for me. It's a vocation. I use that word in the classical sense. That it's a calling. It's a calling from God. It's something that that it's coming from the center of who I am. Do you feel that way about your art and your creativity? Do you feel that it's something God has called you to do?
Yeah, I believe that your adjuster guides you in the ways that you choose. I believe that, whatever path that I really felt as though I'm inspired to go down, my adjuster would have, carved me into the person I wanted to be within that role. Music was something that my stepfather got me involved with at a very early age. And it wasn't the ideal situation because he was really having illegal parties, selling illegal drinks, and, everything that goes on in the underworld I saw from the age of 8 growing up. And it wasn't until, you know, in my teenage years when I had a desire to know about who I was and where I was in the scheme of the universe that I started my search. You know, before that I had no prior religious education, no Sunday school, no church. So I really came from an unbiased angle when I started my search for truth. And I searched in every avenue, every religion, went to various religious organizations, asking a few questions. And as I progressed and learned more, my questions would develop until I realized that there was no institution and no book, no religious book that had the answers to my questions anymore. You know, so basically, I would say, since I've learned what I've learned, I just feel as though the more you learn in any occupation, I really believe in any occupation, the more you learn and understand and the closer you get to live in the will of God, it has to come through you into every aspect of your life, into your home life, your social life, and even your work ethics. Have to become more spiritual the closer you
get. Well, I think what you're talking about is living a life of integrity, which means being integrated as opposed to being compartmentalized, where you say, well, you know, I've got my spiritual life here, my professional life here. It's not like that. That's we are to be whole people. And one of the things that I want to I can't resist asking this question, Tata, since you're from Jamaica. Did you ever explore the Rastafarian religion?
Well, my family's from Jamaica. I was actually born in the UK in London.
Oh, okay.
And yes, I did. I definitely when I was 16, 17, 18, the reggae music really exploded in the UK. And with that, so did the Rastafarian movement and philosophy. And for a young black man growing up in a very white country and feeling the sting of racism and not really knowing much about my own identity, all of us as being first generation black young people with Jamaican parents, we all really attached ourselves to the Rastafarian movement, not so much for its precepts or beliefs, but more so for the culture of it, for the fact that we were black, for the fact that it represented our heritage, for the fact that we could grow dreadlocks and all belong to one identity. And it wasn't until, you know, maybe after the first year or year and a half of me being involved and being a part of the cultural identity that I started to explore the philosophy and wanted to know what was the viewpoints. And it was at that point that I realized that this was not the movement for me.
Was that prior to your spiritual searching, or was that part of your spiritual searching?
I would say that was the beginning of it.
Okay.
That's when I first started to pick up the Bible to balance what was it I was hearing. And how did that reflect on what was in the Bible? And then I went from the Rastafarian movement to start my study of the Bible. And that's where all of my questions started to spring from, when I realized that there were so many gaps in the Bible and unanswered questions and scenarios that didn't quite make sense to me.
Pato, I want to just say thank you to you, because I have worked with some famous people who also believe very much in the Urantia book, and they walk a fine line. And it's because we know, those of us who've read it know the potential for its controversialness, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
And some of the people that I've worked with had to be very low-key about their involvement, or felt they had to. And I have to tell you, I so admire your courage, because I understand how much courage it takes to stand up for this thing. I myself have stood up for it, and I've made myself a target to fundamentalists, and I've made myself a target for people to take pot shots at me because I believe it. But I would never deny it in a million years. I couldn't. It's that important to me, and I think you and I have that in common. But I also want to share a story. Years ago in the early 90s, my young daughter, Jean, at the time she was young, she was about 17 years old, and she was working at Red Rocks serving Subway sandwiches to the crowd. And one of her bosses, a man by the name of Jack, she really liked this fellow, and they discovered that they're both Urantia Book believers. And they thought that was so great that they shared that. They had that in common because, as we know, not many people on the planet still have even heard about the Urantia Book. So
yes.
They were there. Jean was there working Reggae on the Rocks. And she came home just absolutely stunned because somebody during the conference, during a performance, said, "Here's to Michael of Nebadon. Here's to Creative Mother Spirit." And she said, "Mom, the crowd went wild." And she said, I ran to find Jack. And when I found him, I said, "Jack, did you hear that?" And they embraced each other and they celebrated because Michael was said openly to a crowd of people and rejoiced, and the crowd rejoiced, and it was just like so thrilling to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know for many years after that was you that said that. But what a joyful thing that was for me to, you know, to have that affirmed for her. For me, that was worth the price of admission. So thank you. Thank you for being willing to stand up. You have a career. You're an amazing artist. You have a lot to gain by not saying anything about the Urantia Book. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you for being willing to stand up for it.
Thank you
so much.
I guess for me, a part of my musical journey has also been to share my education. And as I have been writing albums, and the more I learn is the more I want to share with the people. And once I got hold of the Urantia Book and realized, hold on, actually, I have been born in a time where there is a revelation on the planet available to people who are hungry for advanced truth. And for me, as a lyricist and as someone who wants to spread the word and enlighten people through music, I had no choice but to share the Urantia Book. And it's like, I always said if I ever, you know, came into a lot of money, I would want to share it with my family so we could all celebrate, you know, together. And for me, the Urantia Book is the greatest treasure on the planet. And I don't know if you've ever seen Lord of the Rings, where that I think Gollum says, "My precious." And sometimes that's how I hold my Urantia Book. But it's not something I want to keep to myself. It's a precious gem that, you know, anyone with the intellectual capacity and hunger for truth should really know about it. And if that comes at a price of me being unpopular or me seeming like I'm lost or a weirdo or part of a cult, then so be it.
Well, but let me ask you a thing, Patsy, and I don't want to minimize anything Paula just said, because I totally agree with her. I mean, the fact that you're standing up for it publicly is fantastic. But I would think that in your career, I could be wrong, but it hasn't gotten you in trouble in any way, has it? I mean, you haven't really run into, or have you? You haven't run into any kind of persecution or opposition because of it, have you?
Yeah, I've run into a lot of opposition.
Oh, you have, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
In what sense?
Well, in reggae music, really, there is two avenues that you can take as an artist as far as religious viewpoints, and those are usually either Rastafarian or Christian.
Okay.
But both religious viewpoints base their beliefs on the Holy Bible.
Okay.
To step away from the Bible and have another book that you would deem as being more advanced is one of the worst things that you could possibly do.
Wow, okay.
Is this in the Rastafarian religion?
Yeah, the Rastafarian religion is based on the Holy Bible. Mostly, I would say, the Old Testament and the Book of Revelation. But there are different denominations of the Rastafarian movement. Some that believe that Selassie is God, Emperor Selassie is God, and some that believe.
Yeah, let's clarify that for the listeners, because a lot of listeners may not know. Haile Selassie was an Ethiopian emperor, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And they believe that, and Rastafarians, at least, as you said, some of them believe that he was either God or the second coming of Jesus Christ, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And speak up. That you guys, because we're having some complaints on the board again about the audio. So,
okay, I'm really sorry about that. But
oh no.
But basically, when you use the truth from the Bible, it doesn't really matter if you're a Christian or a Rasta, and it doesn't matter what denomination of Rasta you are, or what denomination of Christian you are. If the Bible is your foundation, then there is a lot of, the majority of the truths from the Bible are harmonious with everybody. If you come from a viewpoint that you have another book that you are calling a revelation, then it automatically alienates you from everybody that believes that the Holy Bible is the book and the only book, and any other book is Lucifer misleading people. And a lot of, and not only that, also the way that the Urantia book handles the race issue also alienates a lot of people in the black community.
Okay, but correct me if I'm wrong about this, and I want to get into the race issue, but not right this moment, but I want to ask you something. Since most people don't know about the Urantia book, I would assume that most people don't know what the book says about race anyway, unless they look at it. So, I mean, that particular issue, has that put you into a position of controversy?
Well, that also has put me into an issue of controversy with anybody in the black community, and that is worldwide, who believes in black pride.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay, but again, they would have to know what the Urantia book says first, right? I mean, if they don't know that the Urantia book says these things, then they're not going to it's not going to be an issue to them, is it?
Well, what you have to remember, for me, I had certain questions that I needed answering from the Urantia book. When I found the book, the first thing I did was look for Melchizedek.
Okay.
Because he was the biggest mystery for me in my search for truth. And I knew that if I found Melchizedek, then I had found what I was looking for. When I found the Urantia book, I opened it, and I saw that one of the authors was Melchizedek. I knew that I had found the book, and my whole body from head to toe started vibrating.
Now, where did you first hear of Melchizedek, Pato? Why Melchizedek?
In Hebrews chapter 7. Of the Bible, it says that Melchizedek had no mother, no father, no beginning of days, no ending of life.
Wow.
No genealogy, but remains a priest continually. And because of that last phrase, that he remains a priest continually, I sincerely believe that Melchizedek was still available to mankind.
Wow. So just that one sentence from the Bible, it just really sunk in.
Yes.
I know we're going all over the place here, Pato. That's okay, though. It's okay, because that's the spirit is leading us here. But I have to ask you, since the first thing I thought of when you said Melchizedek was, did you ever explore the Mormon religion? Because the Mormons believe in a priesthood based on Melchizedek.
Yes, I actually have spoken to many Mormons, and I have a Book of Mormon. But after reading the Book of Mormon, my desire, my questions were still not answered.
Okay. So going back, what I was asking is, how would the Urantia Book's racial statements put you I guess what I'm saying is most people who don't even know that the Urantia Book makes these statements. So why would that? Are you saying that when you try to introduce the book to black people, they want to know if there's anything in there about black pride? Is that what happens? Or
what I'm trying to say to you is that coming from a race that has been subjected to slavery and ongoing racism, police brutality, unfair opportunities in society, my people are always looking for a way to validate themselves as a race, which to a certain extent is a good thing, to have racial pride. I don't know, for me it was not the primary goal for me. My primary goal was to find the truth, regardless of where it came from or how it looked. I wanted to know the truth. A lot of my people, when I show them the Urantia Book, they go to the page and they go to the pages about race, because the first thing they want to do is validate their race. And it's just like certain people who have different views and hold those views to be the foundation of their existence, you know. My viewpoints are very flexible, because if I find the truth that is higher than the truth I have, I will abandon my truth. I try to be open to the spirit of truth.
Mm.
But some people get locked into certain truths, and because of the foundation of that truth, even if it's an untruth, they cannot let it go because they have held on to it. And it also helps them to belong to a community of people who hold on to that truth as their ultimate truth. So when you show them the Urantia Book, if it goes against the grain of their racial views, their religious views, or their social views, they abandon the book, not based on the fact that this truth could be a higher truth, but just on the fact that it's a different truth than they already hold dear to their hearts.
You know, this is such an important point, and I want to share an insight that I had recently as I was contemplating, because I think you guys know my favorite pages in the book are the life and teachings of Jesus, probably because it's an integration of everything that the book has just told you in the first three parts.
Yes.
And I wouldn't trade the first three parts for anything. I just love Jesus that much, and like you, Pato, when I picked up the book, it went right to the Jesus papers, birth and infancy.
Yes.
I was sold, because Jesus has been my touchstone spiritually since I was a tiny little child, as long as I can remember. But, you know, he said something, and this goes back to what we were talking about a moment ago, about you being willing to stand up and minister. And in many ways, because you are a reggae musician, it's okay to sing about spiritual things. It's almost expected. But the insight I had was the midwayers at the end of the book tell us a lot about secular materialism and the dangers of that. And at one point, they make a commentary during the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst, for they shall be filled. And the midwayers then tell us, you know, it's not a good idea to fast spiritually. Because just like when you fast materially, when you starve your body, you end up losing your appetite.
Yes.
The insight I had was that in this age of secular materialism, many, many people who are in the throes of it have literally lost their appetite for spiritual things. They don't have it anymore. They're not spiritually hungry anymore. And then the words of Jesus where he says, become adept at whetting the appetites of your fellows for the truth. And
yeah.
I thought, wow, you know, the insight was, wow, this is our job, to get them to be spiritually hungry again. And
that's
this is
right.
No easy task. It was easy for you to recognize the Urantia book, or for me, or for Andre, or for many of us, because we really were spiritually hungry. We were searching. We were craving those answers. We were asking for those answers. We were not satisfied with a lot that we had been told. But much of the world that is in the throes of secular materialism is not hungry and is not craving. So then we have to learn to whet their appetite. And that's what I think you have the ability to do in such a beautiful way, because music crosses so many boundaries.
Yes.
I have a religious message for you folks, and they're going to go, yeah, yeah, right. You know, it's kind of like Bill Maher, you know. You guys are idiots. They just completely shut you down. They won't even open the least little bit. But music actually crosses those boundaries. And when I've been in your concerts and you ask people to reach out and hold somebody's hand standing next to a total stranger, it is so it's so moving, Pato. And I see the look on their face when I turn and take their hand, and it gives me the opportunity to love them, to let them feel my love.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves them.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. You really do have a musical ministry, even before you said that. Officially,
yes.
You did.
And the other thing, going back to what you said about people losing their spiritual appetite, it's very true. And what happens sometimes when you lose your appetite for food, when you try to eat something, you throw it up. You know?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with spiritually, you know, when people lose their appetite, when you start talking about God or about religious dogma, they reject it and throw it away, you know. So you really have to, it has to be, you plant seeds, you know. You're not trying to push anything at people. You're just planting a seed, you know. How many spiritual people are in the house? How many people believe in that, you know, there's more to this world than meets the eye? You know, nothing that is going to, you know, be too heavy for somebody to digest, but just something that might make them go home and think to themselves, wow, you know, life is a miracle, you know?
you just mentioned my favorite song of yours. In fact, we don't have to play it right this minute, Paul, but if you could cue that up for us so we could play that in a few minutes, I would love to do that. I'd love to play that song for the audience, because it's just a great song. That is my favorite song that you do. And, Pato, you know, one of the things that you said that I think is so important is you talk about how if you discover something that's true, you'll abandon your previous truth and go for it, which is what Jesus tells us to do. That's the religion of the Spirit as opposed to the religion of authority or the religion of fear. You go wherever the Spirit leads you to go. You go wherever truth leads you to go.
Yeah.
Now, it's funny you should say this, because I won't get into the whole story, but a few months ago I had a really unfortunate, tragic situation happen with a friend of mine who I made the mistake of telling him a lot more about the Urantia book than I should have, and I thought he was a safe person to talk to about it, and he basically told me that he doesn't think I'm a Christian anymore because I don't believe in the atonement doctrine, and he basically told me that I'm no longer his brother in Christ, and he's still my friend, but he treats me differently now, and it was really a heartbreaking thing for me, because I'm a pretty sensitive person, and you know, the whole thing was pretty difficult for me. But one of the things that that I said to him, I was corresponding with him by email, and I kept saying to him, I want you to know that I could be wrong, okay? And I think, for me, and I'm not trying to toot my own spiritual horn here, but to me, that's strong faith. When you admit, you know, hey, I could be wrong, but you have enough faith in God that, you know, you're confident that God will show you the truth, whatever that is. And so to me, I just want to commend you for your willingness to go wherever truth leads you, because some people, I think, when they hear someone say, I could be wrong, they think, well, that person must not have much faith. But I actually, you know, I think that what they tend to confuse faith with a belief in a rigid set of dogmas. But, you know, real faith means, you know, I could be wrong. And, you know, as one Christian author put it, she said, my religion is subject to change without notice.
Yeah. Well, I don't really, for me personally, when I deal with Christians, I deal with them on a very different level than I would deal with somebody who is lost or somebody looking for the truth. Because I find that Christians are very set in the knowledge they have and in their faith in the Bible. They have a very strong faith in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as my knowledge and as far as what I have found in the Urantia book, I make it very clear that I am not a Christian.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
But that I am actually a follower of Jesus Christ. And if for me to be a Christian, I would have to uphold and believe in what the Christian doctrine offers. And it would be the same as me trying to say I am a Rastafarian just because I look like one. If I do not believe in the precepts or the concepts of Rastafari, automatically I am no longer a Rastafarian. I was in many churches during my search. I was in the Baptist church, the Pentecostal church.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the Jehovah's Witness church. I was in many, many churches when I was asking my questions and searching. And many times I was very close to becoming a member of the churches. But when I realized that there was certain concepts or certain doctrines that I did not believe to be true, I automatically had to withdraw from the church. And I went through a period of isolation and loneliness because I did not belong to any
yeah.
community of believers. Right now, I'm a Urantian as far as the planet I was born on, and also because I have a like-mindedness with the Urantia movement and people who have found this revelation and believe in this revelation. But even the revelation of the Urantia book is limited in its endowment of truth. So,
and
well, sure, and the book is not, I think it's, we have to be careful that we don't become Urantia book fundamentalists, just like there are Christians who are, you know, the book is not God. The book is a means to an end. It points beyond itself to God. Now, I want to say, just so the audience knows this, and it's not, I have no interest in starting an argument with you about this, Pacho, it's just a difference that we have. I do call myself a Christian, and I think that's probably why I get in trouble sometimes, because occasionally I don't personally see any conflict between Christianity and the Urantia book, because there's so many different brands of Christianity. I mean, I don't call myself a Bible-believing Christian, but I do call myself a Christian, and that's just my own personal preference. I wouldn't force that on anybody else. I thought this particular person was a safe person to share this with, and most Christians, at least most conservative Christians, I would not share the Urantia book with. But in this particular case, I just happened to make a slip, you know. But anyway, I would like to turn the corner here a little bit and talk a little bit about this next song that we're going to play here, because it is my favorite song that you do. And the song Life is a Miracle. Tell us a little bit about how that song came about.
Regarding Life is a Miracle, but can I just finish what I was saying?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry.
Before I talk about Life is a Miracle. I just wanted to say that, you know, as far as the Christian idea, I really believe that if somebody has a book, whether it's the Quran or the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita, any book, if that person has a book, they're happy with the book, and that book is enhancing their spiritual growth,
mm-hmm.
then power to them.
Absolutely.
And I respect that. And
yeah.
as soon as I talk to somebody who is very set in the truth that they have, I back away and look for things that we have in common.
Right.
But as far as me saying that I may be wrong with what the truth I have, I'm 100% definitely confirmed without a shadow of a doubt that the Urantia book is the highest revelation on this planet, and I would lose my life to put that on the line, you know, because that is what I believe firmly without a shadow of a doubt. And there is no persecution, there is no There is no degradation. There is no comeback from that statement or from my belief in the Urantia book that I would not happily accept as I continue in my ministry to let people know that anyone who is seeking for the highest truth on the planet, you need to have the Urantia book, because there is no truth on this planet that is available to us that is higher than the Urantia book at this moment in our planetary evolution.
I absolutely agree with you, Pato, absolutely, wholeheartedly. You spoke my heart. And Jesus himself said, blessed are you, blessed, if they persecute you, when they heap all manner of persecution upon you and revile you for the sake of this gospel. For great is your reward in heaven.
But you know what? Thank God that we aren't in a situation where we're being put to death and martyred. And I hope that you stay with us for a long time to come, Pato.
But you know, they say sometimes that you know the greatest thing you've got is your name and your reputation. And
yeah.
And sometimes you know people are afraid to lose their name and their reputation because of their beliefs. You know, and for me, it's not just about what I believe. Michael, Gabriel, Melchizedek, the Brighton Morning Star, all of the beings, the midwayers, all of the beings involved with this revelation, put it on this planet for a reason. And you know, what is my role as a member of that cosmic citizenry is to assist with the enlightenment of this planet to bring us closer towards light and life. And if that means ruffling the feathers of a few people who are trapped in their belief system, then so be it. But controversy is necessary for this revelation to go forward.
Mm.
Just like in Jesus' time, you know, it was controversy that brought the attention to the masses. And when the apostles started to lay down their lives after Jesus laid down his life, it enhanced the revelation and caused it to overtake the entire Roman Empire.
That's true.
If it's our reputations that is at stake now, rather than our lives, is it our reputations? Is it our pride? You know, if those things are what we have to sacrifice in this stage of our evolutionary development on this planet, then so be it. But we have to create controversy. We have to push this revelation into people's faces sometimes so that they can go home and say, he's got a Urantia book. Oh, somebody in the house might say, what is a Urantia book? And the person that is rejecting us ends up being the person who is promoting us, you know,
right,
to another generation who are listening on the sidelines and are then interested in inquiring about this book that is causing so much controversy.
You know, I have to tell you guys another story right now, Pato, and it's so interesting because it was as I was going to your concert. You played in Denver at the Bluebird Theater, I believe, and my husband and I were having a beer across the street waiting for the showtime, and we walked out, we crossed the street, and you walked out of the theater and walked down the street, and you gave me a big hug, and you were going back to your room to get ready and stuff, and I hugged you back, and you went on your way, and I headed down towards the theater, and there were... And this is just an example of ministry as you pass by, but standing up for truth. And there were three on a bus bench right there in front of the theater. There was an old man, a street, and two young people, you know, maybe 20s, in their early 20s. And they were sitting there together, and this old man watched you and I embrace. And as I walked back towards the theater, he said to me, Sister, will you pray for me?
Yeah.
I said, "What? Well, of course I will pray for you." And I said, "What would you like me to pray about?" And he said, "I have such misery in my back." And so I put my hand on his back, and I took his hand in my hand, and I prayed for him with all my heart. We just, right there on the street, I prayed for this man, this bum, as the world would see him. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful prayer and a spontaneous prayer. And when I was done, he looked up at me with tears in his eyes and he said, "That was such a beautiful prayer." Now, keep in mind, these two young people were taking this all in, right? He mm-hmm. said, "That was such a beautiful prayer. What church are you with?" And I just smiled at him and I said, "You know, I'm not with a church." And I pointed at my heart and I said, "This is my church. Mm-hmm. If it isn't here, it isn't anywhere."
Yes.
And those two young people, Pato, they looked at each other immediately, so startled. I mean, their eyes were just huge, like, "Did you hear what she said?"
Yes.
This was a truth they had already affirmed to themselves. I could tell by their reaction.
Yes.
And they witnessed that to each other. It's like, the truth we knew, there it is.
There it is.
And that's the affirmation. And I don't know how we get the word out. I just know we have to get it out, that there is a greater truth on this planet
mm-hmm.
that wakes people up to the reality of God's love.
Mm-hmm.
And however we can do that, and I think you're absolutely right when you say that, you know, Jesus did it. He, you know, I always tell people, look, Jesus could have shut up and sat down. He could
mm-hmm.
have gone away, and the Pharisees and the religious leaders of his day would have let him live if
mm-hmm.
he'd just be quiet and
just
quit seeing this. But he didn't. He was willing to die for it. And that's what I think he meant when he said, "For no greater love hath a man than he'd be willing to die for that truth."
Mm-hmm.
You know, "I'll lay my life down for you. They're going to kill me for telling you the truth. But
mm-hmm.
I'm still going to tell you."
Yep.
And that's us. That's our job. I believe that with all my heart.
And what to me always sticks in my mind is that a few weeks before the crucifixion, they were planning to make Jesus the king. You know,
yeah.
they wanted to crown him because he had done so much good things and had fed everybody. And he told him, "I'm not interested in being the king. You know, I'm interested in the kingdom being in your hearts." You know, and after that, the people who were the closest to him, his apostles, were crushed because they wanted to see the glory now.
Yeah.
And even when the mother brought the two brothers to two of the apostles to Jesus and said, "Can they be on your left and your right hand side?" And Jesus says, "You know, do you really want this?" You know, so yeah, you know, Jesus was very controversial. There was a time when he, you know, realized it was time to, you know, step back, you know, let things slide, you know, keep building the foundation. But once he was ready for the controversy, he kept pushing, you know, and he full well knew what was going to happen. And when it did come down, that was his loneliest moment because everybody ran.
Yeah.
Everybody was looking out for their own survival, and even some of the closest people to him were willing to reject him, you know, and denounce him, you know.
But he was steadfast.
I want to make sure that we give out our phone number again, 646-716-8158, 646-716-8158. And I do want to play that beautiful song. Before we do, I want to make sure that we get a clarification from you, Pato. I want to make sure that I understand what you're saying here, because I agree with you. You're right. Controversy is going to have to be part of this. And I submit, you know, I'm doing the show publicly. Anybody who wants to can Google my name and find out that I'm involved with this show. And I have a lot of friends in the conservative Christian community. I'm doing PR right now for a guy who is a very conservative Christian. If he found out what I was doing, he probably, I don't know what he would do, you know. But the thing is that, let me ask you this, and I want to make sure that I understand what you're saying. You're not suggesting, though, that your answer book readers who do keep their faith in the Revelation private, you're not saying that they, because they may have good reason to. I mean, I know some ministers, for example, who minister in very conservative churches, and if they were to go public with it, you know, they would lose their job. And are you saying that those people, you're not making a judgment about those people's faith or anything, are you? I mean, are you saying that those people are are not really standing up for the truth, or you're not saying that, are you?
I would say that there is a time for everything.
Yeah, I agree there. Yeah.
You know, and I would say that each individual has to determine within their own heart and soul when is the right time for them to proclaim the truth that
mm-hmm.
they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they feel within their heart and soul, because I do not know the relationship between any individual and their adjuster, I can only talk to you about my relationship with my adjuster. And as far as I know, my adjuster has made it very clear to me that now is the time, you know, well, it's always been the time for me to share what I find. If I find something that I think is beneficial, not only to the people of this planet, but to Michael and his plan, then I'm going to share it. If other individuals decide to use the Urantia book as an enhancement of their spiritual journey, and rather than share the book, they will share the truth of the book in small slices, or not even share the book at all, but let their life be an example for others to follow, then so be it. But from speaking from myself, I find it very hard to know the truth and not share it with the world.
Well, and to find some way to share it. But I think, you know, I always resist this notion of we have to be either or. I think always it's both and.
I absolutely. Yeah, because I've run into, and it's funny that you say that, Paula, because I feel exactly that way. I'm in a both and position because on the one hand, yes, I am being very public about this on this online radio show. On the other hand, a lot of my friends don't know I'm doing it. And if they did, I don't know what they would think. You know, so when I go to a Bible study, you know, a small group Bible study with a conservative Baptist church, you think I'm going to tell them I'm a Urantia book reader? No way. But I do share the truth in small slices over there. I would like to turn the corner here and talk about this next song that we're going to play, because it's my favorite song that you do, Pato. And tell us a little bit about this song, Life is a Miracle. How did it come about?
Life is a Miracle came about basically when I my daughter called me and basically told me she felt that she was going into labor. So I took her to the hospital, and she asked me if I would stay with her while she gave birth. And it was kind of tricky because she didn't want to use any medication or any hospital enhancements for labor. She wanted to do it 100% naturally. And I was kind of afraid to stay in the room, but she convinced me, and I watched my daughter give birth. And I guess when I saw my granddaughter take her first breath, I was just blown away. Something very miraculous happens when a child takes its first breath.
Now, had you seen a mother give birth before?
No, not up in person. I would always find a way to get away from the delivery suite or from being in a hospital, full stop. But for my daughter, it was not an issue for me, really. And I went home, basically, and based on, you know, the information I had from the Urantia book, it just helped me to write a beautiful song. And Life is a Miracle is definitely one of the best songs I've ever written.
And it was up for a Grammy, right, Pato?
Yeah, it was nominated for a Grammy.
Wow, fantastic. It is an amazing song. Shall we play it?
Yes,
let's
please.
Do it.
Okay, here we go. Life is a Miracle by Pato Benton.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and God said, let there be light.
Life, oh life,
life is a miracle,
oh life,
life, oh life,
life is a miracle,
it's a miracle, every time a mother gives birth, tell me who can say how much a child is worth, a miracle, living on this planet Earth, rotating to the rhythm of the universe. life more precious than the rarest stone, more valuable than silver or gold. Life, the essence is invisible to the scientific mind, it's impossible. Like the secret of the seed that grows into a tree, the starry galaxies remain a mystery. Oceans and the seas, the air we breathe, God knows that I believe. Life is a miracle. Life, oh life. Life is a miracle.
Oh
life. Life, oh life. Life is a miracle. As I turn one page of our history, I see so many great personalities like Marcus, Messiah, Garvey, Emperor Selassie, and the great Bob Marley. Malcolm X with any means necessary. Martin Luther marching to victory. Mother Teresa, Princess Diana, even Tupac Shakur and the one Daddy Biggie. Well, they will always have a place in our memory. And in time to come, you wait and see, they will all get the gift of eternity. God knows that I believe. Life is a miracle. Father, who art in paradise, we thank you, Jah, for the gift of life. And though this world is filled with trouble and strife, in time to come it will be worth the price. Life, the journey of experience, by growing we secure our deliverance. Life, the phenomenon, the prodigy, the marvel of an undiscovered destiny. So let's give thanks to our Father above for all of the wonderful things that He does. Life is the ultimate gift of love. God knows that I believe, yes I do. Life is a miracle, it's true. Life, oh life, life is a miracle.
Oh life,
life, oh life,
life is a miracle.
Life, oh life, life is a miracle.
Oh life,
life, oh life,
life is a miracle.
To paradise.
Thank you so much, Pacho. That's a great tune, and I just really appreciate it. This is Andre Traversa with Paula Thompson on The Cosmic Citizen. We're speaking with Pacho Banton. Pacho Banton is, of course, a reggae artist, singer, musician, songwriter, who is also a believer in our great revelation and doesn't hesitate to talk about it publicly. I got to tell you, you've got more courage than I do. I sometimes I feel, Pacho, like my faith is tiny compared to yours. So, I'm a little intimidated by your holiness.
I think somebody said something like that to me once, and I think maybe it's just that I'm naive, or maybe I'm just, you know, I don't know. It doesn't really concern me that much, you know. As far as being, for instance, being a reggae artist from the UK, in the reggae genre, most I would say 99% of reggae artists who are really achieving anything in the reggae industry are from Jamaica. So being from the UK makes me an outsider.
What about UB40? Were they from England?
Yeah, they're from England, but most people don't consider them to be a reggae act. They're considered more as a pop act who use reggae.
That's interesting. Okay.
And
you know,
Pato,
you recently, at the beginning of the show, we played a segment from your recent effort, which is called The Words of Christ, and you've done two versions now, part one and part two, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's right.
And we played a segment from part two, The Words of Christ. And I'm curious, what inspired you? I mean, I know that that's a loaded question because I know that obviously the words of Jesus inspired you. But beyond that, you know, it's a huge contribution and a great tool from what I can see and what I've experienced to have it, to give to people and to young people. And to whet their appetites, and even your Rancho Book readers have expressed on the board and wanted me to express to you that they played in their cars on their way to work and as they're doing their difficult jobs for the day, and it really helps them. But can you touch a little bit on the words of Christ and what inspired you?
Well, basically, like you said earlier, Paula, you know, your favorite part of the book is the Jesus papers. Definitely, I would say that is my favorite part of the book also. The way that the Midwayers have portrayed the whole image and put it together really gives you an opportunity to almost see it. You feel as though you were actually there visualizing not only the physical element of what was happening, but also behind the scenes in the spiritual background, what was happening. And I've always found great pleasure from that part of the book and also reading that part of the book to my children. One night I was lying down and I felt something say to me or put into me that I needed to do the words of Christ to music. And for some reason in my head I thought that it had already been done. And I kind of brushed it off. And then a few days later, the same thing came back into my mind again. You need to do the words of Christ and put it to music. And then I started to think, okay, even if it's being done, I could do it in my own way. And then I started to really think, what kind of undertaking is this that I would really be going to, you know, or trying to deliver? And then when I realized the immensity of it, I just said, no, I don't want to do it. And then this prompting went on, and I kept saying, please, don't let me be the one to have to do this. And after about a month, I just gave in, you know, and I just said, okay, I would do my best. So I got the top gospel piano player in the UK to come to my home recording studio. My brother is also a great sound engineer in England, and I called him to my recording studio. The gospel player also is a very conservative Christian. He plays for the top churches and does gospel choirs.
And he agreed to do this?
I showed him the Urantia book before I even asked him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I explained to him that the Urantia book was a revelation. I explained to him that Jesus is Michael, and that I felt that Jesus wanted me to do this work, and I asked him if he would be involved. I showed him the texts that I would be reading over his music, and after reading the text, he was just like, wow, where can I get this book?
Wow.
And he played on the part one. He played 14 tracks in 2 days, and on the part two, he also played another 14 tracks in 2 days. And many of the tracks are just spontaneous. He just started playing piano, and then after we did the piano take, he went and did the strings, and sometimes he put some other accompaniment on it too. And then after we had laid all of the music, I basically lit some candles, in my voicing booth, opened my Urantia book, and prayed every single day during the whole recording process that I would do Jesus' words justice. And there were certain times when I did not feel as though I was the one doing the reading or the expressing. I really felt as though, I don't know who was a part of it, but, you know, I don't take, you know, full responsibility for the words of Christ. I was definitely assisted.
So what happened with this guy? What happened with this person? Did he eventually? Does he have a Urantia book now?
I believe I gave him a Urantia book.
Wow.
And he's very, very impressed. Actually, when we did the words of Christ, the part two recently, during one of the songs, he just started crying uncontrollably.
Wow.
He said he was just moved.
Amazing.
You know,
the guys, the two fellows that worked on the audio DVD that is in the fellowship's books also had the same experience, Pato, where by the time they were done working on that audio DVD, they were both just blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's so powerful about audio versions of the book and readings of the book is that, you know, it really does whet people's appetite because they get it in a small bite in some instances and they hear it. It's read to them. It doesn't seem so strange. The words are pronounced for them, and it really is powerful.
Yes, and when I'm driving, even now, and I actually recorded it, I've listened to it many times, and then not only during the recording, but after the recording, we had to listen to it quite a few times to make sure that everything was right, that there was no mistakes, that the pronunciations are right. And even now when I listen to it, it still sounds fresh, you know. I still hear little things that I didn't hear the first 100 times, you know, or things that I heard before have a higher meaning now. Then as I'm growing, they mean more. The value of what he's saying means more. And even the other day, I kept hearing one thing he says, that there is nothing more, something like Jesus said, there's nothing more hurtful than to be wounded in the house of a trusted friend.
Oh.
Wait, what is he? Oh, say that there's nothing more hurtful than to be wounded in the house of a trusted friend?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I kept wondering what that meant. And then when I really realized that, hold on, Jesus is friends with Abraham, you know? Abraham has gone on to the mansion world and has more than likely met Jesus or Michael. And Michael came down here to the house of Abraham and was wounded in his house.
Wow. Wow.
You know, and it was like, boom, it just came to me. That's what it means. And I've listened to it so many times, you know.
And you know what? I can relate to that, Pato, because that experience I was sharing with you a few minutes ago about my dear friend who I'd known for 16 years, who I'd, you know, broke bread with him, I'd cried with him, you know. I mean, not literally, but, you know, I had bonded with him. We ministered to each other. And, you know, then now he's telling me that he's no longer his brother in Christ. It felt like it was a huge betrayal for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that completely. I do understand that.
And the thing as well is also, what's funny to me is that a human life, our lifetime, you know, is like so minuscule in the scheme of eternity. And sometimes we really get bogged down with the things that are happening in our daily mortal life, and we make them into such huge issues.
Yes, absolutely.
But when you realize that, hold on, let me just look at my life as one day instead of 40, 50, 60, 70 years. Let me look at my life as one day. The angels say that, you know, our true birth is when we become Urantia, when we are resurrected. You know, that is when we really come out of the womb of our mortal life.
Mm.
And if that's true, then everything that's going on now is so minuscule. And people that reject you or reject the truth that you believe to be true, when we wake up on the mansion world, I honestly believe that they will come back to you and say, now I've got it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now I see what you was talking about, Mansion Worlds and Michael and Melchizedek and all these things. And not to say that we want to be in a position to say, I told you so.
Right.
But it will make this earth life become so insignificant as far as what we believed to be true.
Yes.
Once we're surrounded by higher beings and angelic beings, and once we all go through the Mansonia schools together and are all enlightened together, by the time we get through Mansion World number one, our earth life will look like it was, 10 seconds.
Yes, and the book also says life is but a day's work. Do it well, and that's kind of what I was thinking when you talked about our life being a day. I actually think our lives here on Earth are both very significant and insignificant at the same time. In a sense, it's kind of like because those relationships that we form here, though, we can take with us into eternity.
Yes,
I want to share a quote on this vein, you guys, that to me is just it's what you've been saying, Pato, and of course it's from the words of Jesus. It's from paper 156, The Sojourn at Tyre and Sidon, and section 5, Jesus' teachings at Tyre. He says, "Do not become discouraged by the discovery that you are human. Human nature may tend toward evil, but it is not inherently sinful. Be not downcast by your failure wholly to forget some of your regrettable experiences. The mistakes which you fail to forget in time will be forgotten in eternity.
Take
your burden of soul by speedily acquiring a long-distance view of your destiny, a universe expansion of your career." And then he goes on to say, "Make not the mistake of estimating the soul's worth by the imperfections of the mind or by the appetite of the body. Judge not the soul, nor evaluate its destiny by the standard of a single unfortunate human episode. Your spiritual destiny is conditioned only by your spiritual longings and purposes." And I know that you do, that's part of the words of Christ, right, Pato? You have that recorded.
Yes,
that
I do.
Wow. Hey, I'm sorry, were you going to say something, Paula?
No, I was just...
Okay. I want to just.
There's so much comfort in that quote. So much comfort in it.
Yeah.
For us humans.
I wanted to bring go back to two things. I want to make sure we cover before we finish our show here. Well, first of all, again, I want people again to know that they can are perfectly free to call in here. Again, the number is 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158. Two things I want to discuss, Pato. One is. Going back to the song "Life Is a Miracle," I love seeing you perform that live, because the thing that's so great about that is you got everybody singing along. You say singing "Life Is a Miracle" at the end, and the other thing I love is at some point in your performances you encourage everybody to go give each other a big hug, and you have this way of creating community in your performances, and it's almost that's what's so great about it. It's like you're like a catalyst, you have this way of releasing the spirit of brotherhood. Is that something that you are, do you feel that's part of something you want to do when you perform? Is that something you want to do to release that spirit of brotherhood and family?
Well, to me, that is, as a follower of Jesus, that is the most important thing I can do before my music career.
Mm.
Before anything that I do, even before the Urantia book, before anything, what the Master asked us to do was to go forth spreading the good news about the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. And when I go on stage and ask everybody to recognize that we're all brothers and sisters with one heavenly creator, regardless of what we believe, and I ask people to shake hands or show somebody some love, give somebody a hug, what's happening is they're realizing that, they may have come there by themselves or come there with a group, a small group, or come there with their partner. But in reality, everyone in the whole venue is associate with them. on a spiritual level and on a biological level. And it just opens up their hearts to the fact that we are one family.
Mm.
And to me, that is spreading the good news. And also, what's the right word? Doing it in our own way. Because that's what I think Jesus was talking about when he gave, when he was telling the story about the talents, you know. He gave one of them five talents, one talent. And the person with the one talent put it in the ground and covered it up. You know, Jesus has given me a talent, and I want to use that talent, you know, in any way I can to the service of my Heavenly Father. And, you know, one of my talents is music, and I use music as the vehicle for serving God and spreading the good news. And everything else comes after that. You know, any advanced truth that I may know, any, you know, subtleties of seed planting that I might do during a concert, all of those things have to take second place to me going forth and spreading the good news. And whether I was an artist or not an artist, that would be my main function in my life through any occupation I had, would be to spread the good news.
Wow. And because this is a talk radio show, because talk radio is known for controversy, and by the way, for those of you who don't know, I call myself Andre Traversa or Andre Controversa, spreading controversy wherever I go. So I like to do that. Since we are a controversial talk radio show, I'd like to get back to a controversy we were discussing earlier. Pacho, when you found out that the Arantxa book says what it says about the races, specifically about the black race, how did you react initially?
My initial reaction was I felt hurt.
Mm.
I wasn't so hurt by what the book said. I guess it was just the way
right.
the book said it. And a part of me was, you know, wondering, you know, was the angelic commission wording it like that, or was it someone from the human commission who decided to word it like that? But it doesn't really matter to me anymore how it was worded. When I hear a truth, even if it's contrary to what I believe, my first reaction is to reflect on it, evaluate it, and then let the Spirit of Truth tell me if this is correct or not. And I guess one thing that my race has a tendency to do is to associate our greatness as a race with Egypt and with the pyramids. So I wanted to always know, how did the pyramids come into play, and how did such a great race end up being enslaved by people who were primitive when the pyramids were being built? So, you know, all of these issues were cleared up for me. I recognized totally that in the eyes of God and in the eyes of Jesus, all human beings are equal. But there is a human race, you know, and each race has its different strengths and different weaknesses, and each race has its portion of talents to contribute to the whole. Mm-hmm. I also take comfort in knowing that the eventual race that will be on this planet will be a blended race of
yes.
all races,
yes.
and so we will all make a contribution to the whole of the final race. But it doesn't take away from the fact that my race in the Arantxa book is the least progressive race. So it made me just go back and reflect on my race and look at what is really happening globally on a racial level, not as an individual, you know, because as an individual black man, you know, I think I would be able to compete with a lot of other races on an equal level. But as far as a racial thing is concerned, as far as the entire race, and I would have to agree with what the book says, you know, and that's why I don't have a problem with it.
Well, I want to really applaud your courage again and integrity for saying that, because we're living, as I was mentioning to Paula off the air, we're living in such a politically correct age where you can't even make any generalizations. I mean, if I say to you that, I mean, I happen to be blind, and if I say to you that blindness runs in a family, that doesn't mean everybody in the family is blind. It just means blindness runs in the family. So if I say, if someone says, well, you know, low IQ runs in the black race, that doesn't mean every black person has a low IQ. It just means that it runs in the race. So in that same way, what you're saying is that, again, from on a racial level, not an individual level, on an individual level, there are plenty of, you know, spiritual, intellectually gifted black people. But as you said, on a racial level, you know, as a whole, if you look at the race as a whole, they, you know, the book says they're the least progressive race. Let me ask you this. Do you wish, though, that the book had at least, you talk about how each race has its own strengths as well as its own weaknesses. Do you wish, though, that the book had at least given some positive statements about the black race? I mean, it seems almost like it's almost entirely negative.
No, I think that I don't need the book to give me the positive outlook on the black race, because I can see that very clearly. But what also has to be taken into account, when the book talks about progressive, a certain level of what the book is talking about when it talks about being a progressive race is also associated with aggressiveness. You do not become the most progressive race without being aggressive. And the black race is probably the least racially aggressive race on the planet.
When you say that, what do you mean by aggressive?
Aggressive means force, you know, war, using weapons to overcome other races to become the leading race, you know. I think the black race is the only race that doesn't make nuclear arms. You know, we are, and that makes us least progressive. We could be enslaved again because we have not created a mechanism of defense to defend ourselves. The only race on the planet that has ever dropped a nuclear bomb on anybody is the white race.
Right.
But they are the most progressive. So, you know, I also associate progressiveness in the eyes of how it was written in the book with aggressiveness. You know, the only way that the white race could have reached to the level it has as far as economically and as far as, what is the other word, technologically,
sure,
is through slave labor, you know?
I have to chime in here because I think it is so important to note that the Urantia book looks at humanity and the various aspects of humanity, the parts and the whole, as a whole. And it doesn't just look at a snapshot of time, like this moment. It looks at us all on a whole over the whole course of our evolutionary history. And one of the things that it says is that the indigo race would have progressed more had they moved away from the salubrious climates.
That's right.
That one of the things that made the white race progress more is because they did move away, and now they had to solve the problems of cold and heat and food and these other things. So that brought about some progression, was the fact that they moved away from the ready food sources. But the Urantia book doesn't just pick on one group or one individual at all. It picks on all of us. It picks on
that's true.
It picks on the white race, and it also the red race. For instance, it says the red race is very spiritual. But darn, he couldn't quit fighting with himself and with each other. If he'd have united against the onslaught of the white race, he probably would have been able to make a real stand, but he just couldn't. The tribes of the red race could not come together long enough to make a stand. And, you know, I mean, it just looks at every, and for me, what it's doing, and I think this is what you're saying, Pato, and I took this to heart because I, too, am a lover of truth, even when it's painful, because I find that even when it's painful, it's liberating. It has a liberating quality, and it allows you to see things for the way they really are, instead of being fooled, instead of being duped into believing something, and now you're powerless to change it. And so when it told me, you know, for instance, here's a good example. You know, mind as you perceive it on your planet can hardly be the object of adoration, much less worship. You'd be better to just be humble because you're lowly little humans and you don't have it all figured out. So get over yourselves. Be as a child. Be easily, you know, be teachable as an easy believing little one. And quit persecuting each other and quit hating each other and quit being arrogant and thinking you have it all figured out and your religion is the best and your race is the best and your nation is the best and your politics are the best and whatever. Get over it. You're not. You're little. Be little. And allow us to teach you. And man, if you could put your Rancher book in a nutshell, there it is. They're saying, we want you to know, but first you have to be little in your own eyes.
You have to, exactly, Polly, you have to be humble in order to be teachable.
Yes.
And that's why I keep saying to people, the race issue for me is not an issue. And it's not, when they talk about race in the Rancher book as well, they're not only talking about our planet. They're talking about how it happens on every planet.
That's true.
You know? They have the Sangic races on every planet, but just in it comes about in different ways.
Well, actually, the book says they're missing, that some races are missing on certain worlds. See, that's the only part that really bothers me, because it does, when they talk about races as a whole and they talk about evolution, they talk about it in such a clinical way, and I have to remember that they're not talking about the spiritual worth of every individual here. They're talking about races as a whole, but you know, it says that some of these races are exterminated on some, you know, some world, and it's just, when I read, I can understand why someone reading that could really, again, it doesn't take away from my faith in the book.
Can I say something as well, guys?
Sure.
Yes.
what we need to separate as well is that I am not a black man, you know, I am living in a black vehicle. I'm a part of the black race as an individual in this time. You know, I am a spiritual being.
Yes.
Who was created by the Almighty God to come on this planet to experience life. The human body is a biological mechanism.
Right.
Okay? And it's just like the other day I was talking to someone about, I went to England and they cremated my stepfather. And some people were very, very upset that my stepfather was cremated. And I had to spend some time to explain to them that he's not living in that body. You know, you are not burning him. You're burning the vessel that he was used. And whether it takes 100 years for it to turn to ashes, back to dust, or whether they put it in the incinerator and turn it to dust in a few seconds, just like what the angels did with Michael's body, you know, doesn't really matter. The main thing to realize that the human vehicle was used for a portion of time, that time is over, and he has moved on, you know? And what happens with us as human beings, we become so proud about the body we live in.
Yes, very
and
true.
And about the race that we belong to.
Or the nation, whatever.
Or the nation, or whatever. We become so entangled in all of these materialistic things that we lose the essence of, hold on, okay, so what if the black race in the book is depicted as the least progressive race? So what if it was a red man? So what if it was a white man? That's neither here nor there. The main thing is that we're all supposed to be striving to become spiritual and to equalize the balance of the races so that we do become a world that is settled in light and life. So I have no attachments to my material body. I recognize who I am in this time and what I am in this time, and I embrace it and I accept it for what it is. But I have no ego attached to that. And it was the same way why it was so easy for me to abandon the things that I thought were true before I was blessed by finding this revelation, because it challenged me in every single way and has allowed me to feel uplifted, inspired, and to become more than I ever was before.
Well,
and in a way, it tears down all those notions that you are just a body, and it says, no, you are so much more than that. You are an eternal child of the living God. It's like Jesus said. He said, though human beings may differ in many ways, the one from the other, before God and in the spiritual world, all mortals stand on equal footing. And that is what we need to understand. Once we abandon things of materialism, then we get to the place where we are all the same. We are spiritual brothers and sisters. And when we get to that place, that is when we start to hold each other up, uplift each other, and help each other. And that is what will change the world. Not any notion of our difference, but every notion of our similarity.
That is so easy for us to say.
Yeah.
But for somebody who is so tied up in their desire to prove that their race is the greatest race, or they have so much pride in their race, it becomes such a major issue that when you believe something different to that, they are willing to cut you down in any way they can.
Yes.
And that is why this race thing will be a major issue for a long period of time.
Until
people have put less value and less stigma on that avenue, you know?
Well, I think that the whole point is, where do you put your identity? That's really the issue. And as you're talking, Pato, I was thinking about Jesus. You know, Jesus didn't go around talking about how important it was that he was a Jew. You know, he loved his people. He accepted the fact that he was a Jew. He used the Jewish faith, built on the Jewish scriptures. And he loved his people. I believe he did. And by the way, he's still there's a sense in which Jesus is still, I wouldn't say that Jesus is still a Jew, but Jesus is still fully human as well as fully divine, because the book says that he always will be. As you're saying, he did not make a big deal out of the fact that he was a Jew. I mean, he also recognized that his own people were going to reject him. And I don't know, and it's interesting. I don't know if maybe you've had that experience with black people rejecting you because of the Urantia book. But what I think is really interesting is, let me ask you this: are you amazed that there are as many black readers as there are? I actually have to tell you, I'm actually amazing, profoundly impressed with the amount of black readers that, it's not a huge amount, but it's more than I ever thought would be possible. And I think that part of the solution to this is, for black people to stand up publicly and say, listen, I believe in this book. I understand that my own community has these problems. And I think that's part of it. I think if we can get minorities to be public about this, I think that's going to be part of the solution.
Yeah, definitely. As far as how I am treated by certain black people, I guess to a certain level I'm considered almost a racial traitor to the black pride movement. And could you imagine what would happen, or what would have happened, if the book was delivered to a black community in Chicago? And it stated in the book that the white race was the least progressive race.
Wow.
You know?
Thank you for that perspective, Pat, though. That really is.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys, take a call. Shall we take a call?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes.
Okay. Hello, you're on Blog Talk with Pato.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Very
good.
This is Paula, I think, and Pato, and there's somebody else that couldn't remember the name. Hi, everybody. I'm Angela. Just wanted to tell Pato hi. I'm Jamaican, and as I logged in and heard the Jamaican accent, I said, oh, my God, this is an extra special blessing. And then as I called a while ago, you started talking about the racing and I forgive me, you know, listeners and Paula and everybody, but I haven't really touched into the Urantia material since 1990. So to tell you the truth, I don't remember a whole lot.
Okay.
So I don't even remember what they said about the races. But hearing the gist of the conversation, I realize I don't also remember what it says about reincarnation. So I just wanted to throw out that, remember, we all experience all the races anyway. So even if we're coming today as a black person or a red person, whatever that is, whatever, we take turns to experience what we need to experience in each race.
Well, okay, well, wait a second. Are you saying... I'm sorry, what's your name? My name is Andre. What's your name?
Angela Andre.
Angela. Are you calling from Jamaica?
Yes, I'm calling from Jamaica.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. Well, okay, and I'm not trying to step on your toes here, but I want to just make sure that I understand what you're saying. The Urantia book does not support reincarnation.
Okay, well, so I shall apologize, because
that's okay.
Why I started the way I did,
that's
because
right.
To say that I'm really not familiar with the material. So maybe I'll just shut up then.
I think what we're saying, what Pato and Paul and I are saying, is that the book talks about transferring the seat of our identity from our earthly egos to what the book calls our Marantia soul. The Marantia soul is the part of us that's going to survive death. That's our real identity. That's the part of us that we really can hold on to, because that's eternal. It's going to last forever. And so,
sure.
Rather than calling ourselves, I happen to be. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there are some wonderful things about being an Earth creature. I mean, I'm a Ukrainian American. Okay, and I speak Ukrainian, but you know, is that really the heart of my identity? Is that really the seat of my identity? No, the seat of my identity is that I'm a child of God. So whatever race we are. You know, I think the book is encouraging us to transcend or see the limits of our identity in that context, and to see that there's more to us than that.
Angela.
Yes, Fato.
What part of Jamaica are you from?
I'm from Falmouth as I call it, Trelawney, but I live in Kingston.
Okay. What do you do?
I am a soul alignment coach. I'm an interfaith minister. I help people to be aligned with their soul selves.
Wonderful.
That is awesome. Now, going beyond the ideas of reincarnation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the race issue. What
sure.
The Urantia book is actually saying, it's saying that as the angels view us on this planet, they value every individual on this planet as an equal child of God.
Absolutely.
But what they are saying, that on a racial viewpoint, which means that the entire family of the black race or the entire family of the white race or the Chinese race or the Indian race, they view the black man and they're saying that it is something inherent in our biology,
mm-hmm.
that as a race of people, we are not the most progressive, we are the least progressive as a race, but as
okay.
individuals, we have equal ground. So we can strive, once we decide to strive as an individual,
mm-hmm.
we can be as equal as any other person. But when we are dealing on a racial level, it's saying that as a race, we are the least progressive. And could I ask you, as a black person living in Jamaica, how would you view that if somebody was to come to you and say to you that as a race, the black race, is not doing the best right now? How would you reply to that?
That the black race is not doing the best right now?
Yeah, or that we're actually, as a race, we are
not
at the back right now.
Okay. Polite conversation or truth?
Truth. This is talk radio. Let's tell the truth.
Yeah, very, as blunt as you could be.
Yes.
Okay.
Right now on the planet, what I will agree with is that right now on the planet, the black race is holding a lot of energies that all races have to go through. I can agree with the concept that when we incarnate, when we choose at the soul level a particular body and incarnate at that body, we come in to deal with certain issues inherent in that specific race. I can go that far. Get that. No problem with that. So anyone who is now currently incarnate as a black person on this planet is in essence expressing these issues that is taken on at the soul level as an experience. And if you look at the continent of Africa, if you look at the issues, for instance, in the U.S. right now, being brought up to the surface for Americans themselves to look at this whole concept of black in terms of the U.S. presidential election, if you look at so much that's happening with the whole African dichotomy around the planet, you see where the struggle is getting out of mass consciousness, a black mass consciousness, and taking on divinity, taking on the expression as a soul, as a divine expression of God on the planet now, as an individual. Absolutely, I get that.
Angela, thank you. I have never heard it said like that before.
Mm-hmm. That was absolutely beautiful, Angela. Absolutely true, I think.
That was awesome. And Angela, especially because as a Jamaican living in Jamaica,
and you know we don't play. You better? You know that.
And I know as an intellectual black person living in Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's very frustrating when you look at how things are handled and how much killing and how much negativity is going on that beautiful island.
Yeah, but again, it's a struggle. It's a struggle to step out of what the conditioned teaching is of who
yes.
I am, in breaking free into the reality of I am that I am. That's
I am
the struggle
that
we're
I am.
Seeing all over the planet. That's the struggle we're seeing right now in Kingston with the drama. That's the struggle we see on every part, every corner of this planet. That's a struggle.
Yes. That's
so
right.
it takes different forms. But that is the issue that every single human incarnate now is struggling with in their heart of hearts, soul of souls. That's it. Because we are being called by our very soul essence to step into our godhood and to be who we are, to break
exactly.
free. To break
exactly.
free.
Exactly.
And you know, the Urantia book, an overriding theme in the book is about the human struggle, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it, whether you're struggling with, you know, your relationships or prejudiced, or because, you know, I've felt prejudiced in my life for one reason or another, because I'm a woman, because I was overweight when I was 10 years old. I know Andre has been the victim of prejudice because he's blind. And, you know, it's just that's really what we need to overcome, is this notion that we can judge anybody before we know them. And Jesus himself said, you know, when they asked him, how will we know each other, Master? He said, you will know each other by your fruits. He did not say you will know each other by the color of your skin. You will know
Absolutely.
Each other by the church you go to. You will know each other by what you profess to believe. You will know each other by what college you went to or what country you come from. No, he did not say that. He said, you will know each other by your fruits, which means if I am to know you, Angela, or Pato, or Andre, I have to spend some time with you before I can discern whether or not you're loyal or fair or honest or loving or patient or kind. I can't just make that judgment in a snap. I have to spend some time with you to discern your fruits, and that's how I will know you.
And that's something I want to clear. I want to make sure we understand, because regardless of what the book says about race, it's very much against prejudice. What is prejudice? Prejudice is to prejudge. That is what prejudice means. That's where the root of the word comes from. And as I said before, whatever generalizations the book makes about a certain race, it doesn't apply to individuals. That's what makes it a generalization. Generalizations are not true across the board. There are exceptions to them. So I can't see how prejudice, racial or any other kind, is consistent with the teachings of the Revelation.
No
Angela?
Way.
Pato.
Angela, you still there?
Yeah, man, I'm here. I wanted to comment on what something that Paula also said about judgment.
Okay, and I'm going to let you talk now, but I just wanted to commend you on the work that you are doing, because when the Urantia book summarizes the entire book, one of the last things it says in the book, on the very last page,
mm-hmm.
is a great challenge for mankind is for us to get closer to the spirit that lives within us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and we can only do that really by overcoming all of our material hang-ups and
yeah.
by searching and going inwards. And for you to be helping people to do that, that is one of the greatest things that you can be doing right now.
Thank you, Pato. And I'd just like to thank you for your music, because I was listening to it while you were talking, when it was played earlier. And
nice
what was the name of it? Life is a Miracle.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's one of the things I love to just say with my children in our morning centering exercises, prayer, whatever you want to call it, just
mm-hmm.
giving gratitude for the miracle of life. So I really related to the title and the song and the vibes, because I touching into also what Paula was saying, it, for me, everything is energy. At the essence, when we speak about essence, we're really speaking about energy. And what you were saying, Paula, about what Jesus said about how do you know somebody but by the fruits, for me, you know, in 1990, and several years after that, I used to do energy healing work. And so at the very essence, when I want to know someone, what I tune into is them at the soul level.
Yes.
And at the soul level, there's no distinction. That's where the true equality is. That's where there's no separation. That's where
yes.
the God, that's where the goddess is. And
yes.
so it doesn't, I heard you, Paula, talking about an encounter with someone who was begging, and you said a prayer. And it's an encounter, obviously, in Jamaica that I have a lot at the, you know, stoplights with the little homeless
yes.
children, the boys, whatever. And always, it is always to look into their eyes, even if I'm not choosing to give them anything. I look into their eyes and I said, hello. And in my mind, I'm in my heart, they, from my soul, I'm greeting them as my soul brother, my soul
mm-hmm.
sister. I'm greeting them as the God, the goddess that they are. Because we don't need to know anything else other than every other person on the planet, every other life form is God, divinity.
There you go. There
divinity.
You go, and that is
that's
about
all we need. So there is no judgment at that level. There cannot
You're
be
right.
because we'd be judging ourselves. We're all one.
And how can we get to know each other if we start with a judgment? It just won't happen.
Right, exactly.
We must start with
exactly.
equality.
And in the space, the reality, the real reality, there's no such thing as time anyway. I mean, you and I are having a conversation at what? Saturday. Hey, I'm a day ahead. Saturday, it's 1:45 here. And God knows what where it is for everybody. But this is just a little snapshot in time-space reality. There is no time. We are all, in essence, really gods and goddesses, just sharing now in timelessness, in the void.
Yes.
Yes.
And yet we're gifted. We choose this moment to just gift ourselves with saying, hi. Hello, exchange a few words with each other, just as gods honoring other gods.
And you know, Angela, whenever I meet somebody like you, my heart just soars, because I say to myself, Heavenly Father, thank you for this woman who is in her country, and she's shaking the hands of little boys and girls and men and women, and she's looking into their eyes, and she's restoring their human dignity, and she's giving them love from her heart. And I thank the Heavenly Father for you, Angela. Because you're out there doing the work of the Heavenly Father, which is spreading His love and restoring His dignity and His goodwill to humanity. It's the one thing we need more than anything else. We don't need any more judgment. We've had enough of it. We don't need any more negativity. We don't need to be told that we're bad or wrong or unworthy. We don't need it. We've had enough. We
you
need
know.
To be told that we're good, that we're lovely, that God loves us, that He adores us, that all things work together for good, and we can lift humanity up if we will only try to take some of the burden off rather than heap more on. So thank you, Angela.
Thank you.
Meeting people like you, man, it makes my day, it makes my week. I'm so glad you called.
Yeah, me
thank
too.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you, Andre.
I've got a big smile on my face now.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to link
you're
in
welcome.
Via your radio show.
You're welcome.
Call again,
so
Angela.
Blessings.
Let us know how you're doing.
Yeah.
I will. I'm on the internet mostly. I don't hardly go out. I do my stuff on the internet.
Well, good for you. Good to hear from you.
Bless
one love, Angela.
One love, big up, and just continue to bless Pato. Bless
love
things.
Like every
things.
Time.
Bless things. Bless things.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Paula, how much time do we have left here?
Well, we have 10 minutes.
Okay. I want to make sure we close with a song. I'd love to close with a song. It's All About Service. And before we do that, Pato, let me, I guess it's probably sort of self-evident or obvious, but it is all about service for you. But I guess since we have 10 minutes left, and that song's about 4 or 5 minutes long, what I'd like to do is just, do you have any words that you'd like to say to our listeners? We haven't gotten a lot of calls today. I think it's because people just love listening to you, because we have quite a loyal audience. If you have anything you want to say to Urantia Book readers, to listeners here who are believers in the Urantia Book, you know, if you had some kind of word that you'd like to say to them, you know, what would it be?
Well, basically to all Urantia readers of the Urantia Book, I just want to say first, I love you guys very, very much. And, you know, it's just beautiful to belong to a family of like-minded people.
Yeah.
And I do consider the Urantia Book people to be my intellectual family, or as far as my family of viewpoints. I believe that with this revelation, we have a great responsibility. And to sit down on this responsibility to me is a big injustice to the revelation. I really believe that we should read the book, digest the book, live the book, and go forth spreading the good news and sharing the book with the inquiring mind of the people who are looking for advanced truths. I just want to say my whole life is now dedicated to this ministry of spreading the good news and sharing the Urantia Book with people who are searching for the book. And if there's anything I can do for the people in the Urantia movement, I will be there. And if there's any time you guys think that you can be of service to me, or if you look at my website, patobanton.com, or go to my MySpace page, myspace.com/patobanton, you will see that I'm about to do a 50-state tour of America, going into Puerto Rico, Mexico, Hawaii, Guam, and eventually the Caribbean and Japan. But initially, the 50 states of America is my main focus. And, you know, please look at my site, and when I'm coming through your town, please be a part of what I'm doing. We have prayer circles after the shows. It would be awesome to see Urantia people there, you know, creating prayer circles all over the place, you know. Let's have 10 prayer circles all going after a concert, you know. And, you know, just join in, you know. And whatever you're doing, I will be praying for you to, you know, to stay strong, to stay blessed.
Are you coming? Let me ask you something, Pastor. Are you coming back to Chicago?
Yes, I am. You know, we're doing every single state.
That's awesome. That's where I'm from, so.
We're doing, on average, about 3 cities in each state, on average.
Wow.
Pato, where can our listeners get the Words of Christ and your CDs? Can they get them at your website?
Yeah, they can listen to the audio version at truthbook.com. Both CDs are on there that they can listen to free of charge. But if they want to buy the CD, they can go to patobanton.com.
Wonderful. And your musical CDs are all available there as well?
They are there as well, yes, including my new album, Destination Paradise.
Well, the boards are just lit up right now with love for you, Pato. Everybody's saying, Pato, we love you. Thank you. You're courageous. We're inspired by you. And somebody earlier asked, what do you foresee for the next 5 years in Urantia land? Can you briefly address that?
For me, the next 5 years is preparation of the younger generation for the next visitation.
Ah, wow.
And that's where my efforts are going towards right now, is to plant in the seeds of truth that will bring a broader awareness of the necessity to prepare ourselves for a visitation. Whether it's in my lifetime or not, there will be another visitation. And just like the mortal who were on earth preparing the Garden of Eden for Adam and Eve, we need to be about Michael's business right now, preparing for the next visitation. And if that means just making people aware of the concepts of the book, because people will not be able to welcome a magisterial son if they don't know what a magisterial son is. People won't be able to welcome Melchizedek if they don't know who he is. So let's educate people. Let's plant the seeds of truth. Let's just put up banners anywhere that we can put up banners, you know, just with the word Melchizedek, or just with the word Urantia, or just with the word Michael of Nebadan. Anywhere that we can, you know, just plant the seeds and put the concepts into the minds of humanity will help us in the preparation of the next visitation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, I'd like to close. First of all, before we close, I'd be really honored, Pacho, if you could close our show in prayer, and then if we could, Paula, if we could play the song "It's All About Service," which I think we have.
Yeah, the thrill of loving service. And Pacho, I hope you come back again and talk.
If you could close us in prayer before we do that, I'd really appreciate it. I'd love to. I would really be honored to have you pray for the movement and pray for whatever you feel led to pray for.
Okay. Dear Heavenly Father, Mother Spirit, Eternal Son, I just want to say thank you for the gift of life. Thank you for the opportunity to exist within your universe. And thank you for the challenge of a lifetime to bring this dark, crazy world into light and life. Thank you for the gift of such a beautiful revelation. And help us to rise above our intellectuality and get back closer to our humility and spirituality as we move forward every day, trying to rise above ourselves, trying to grow in spirit and to share ourselves and to share your light with all the people who are around us. There is much work to be done and the laborers are few, but we will continue to pray, Heavenly Creator, that thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. I pray for peace on earth and goodwill to all men and women. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thanks, Pato.
Amen, Pato. Thank you so much, bro.
Thank you. I love you guys.
I love you too, man.
You too.
And we will now close with The Thrill of Loving Service from Pato Banton. Thanks, you guys, for listening to The Cosmic Citizen.
Tune in again.
Some say nothing is sweeter than love's first kiss, or getting high till you reach the sky on a cloud of bliss. But as I reflect upon my life and I reminisce, I can't dismiss that I get a thrill from loving service. That is why I'm gonna learn to love, and I'm gonna love to serve. Cause as I serve my brothers and sisters, I am serving the Father. I'm gonna learn. Children, and it don't matter about their color or their creed.
Let's try to identify their needs. The more you give is the more you receive. So let's start giving. Ooh, I wanna learn.
I want.